We're on Lama Tesselman Aleph at the top of the page. We're talking about the matter, M-A-D-D-E-R, of Tzilaos, which is the matter, again, we said was a red dye, and it could grow in nice, soft, fertile land, in which case you were only allowed, according to Beis Shammai, to use wooden utensils, and according to Beis Hillel, you could use a mattock, was it? That was metal, but not the usual, was it a hoe or something that was metal? It had to have a shinui. So now, Beis Shammai agrees to Beis Hillel if it's Purashal Tzilaos. So the Yerushalmi explains Tzilaos is Putra, a rocky area. So then it could even, in other words, you have to use metal because you're going to break the wood, it wouldn't work. So also rocky terrain is less Marasahim because it's not usually cultivated. We all know what cultivation does. Nothing. But Tani Allah. Another brisa. Makom Shana Gulach Rosh. This brisa is going to be a subject of dispute as to what exactly the Gemara is quoting this for. But the simple pshat is that it's saying that if the minhag is the whole rest of the year, is that they plow. That if they plow it, then Yachosh, he can plow it up. Like Nachesh, to weed. Yachosh, he may weed it out. So it's very, I don't like the Gersa. I think the Gra has a much better Gersa, makes a lot more sense. So if you look at the textual variance, second paragraph, Gra amends the Brisa, and I think this makes a lot more sense. Makashnogu Lachrosh, Yachpar, Lenachesh, Ya'akar. In other words, there has to be a Shinoi. So if you usually plow, you can dig. If you usually weed, you can uproot. Meaning, we're talking about the earlier case of uprooting summer onions and matter growing in fertile soil. So the Bryce is saying in a place where, during the non-Shvius years, the people would follow the custom to uproot these plants with a plow. In Shvius, you should dig them up with a spade. Where the custom was to weed them with a spade, you should uproot them by hand. So basically, it's a much better shot. Even though it's not flowing from the hard ground case, which we just got off of, but at least the brisa makes sense. If it's referring to the hard ground, then all it will be, it would just be reiterating that you don't have to make shinuyim. But it's not 100% true, because Beis Shammai agrees to Beis Hillel only that you could use the mattocks. You still have to make some shinui. So I'm not sure, you know, the brisa is a little difficult to put in the context of the hard ground. The Gra's guess is better. Okay, next. So we're talking about the year following Shemitah. So we had a machlokas, the Tanakama, and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said you could buy it miyad. Rabbi Yehuda said you could buy it miyad right away. You don't have to wait, right? So my time with Rabbi Yehuda, why does he say you don't have to wait? Now he mentions over here in parenthetically that there's a Mishnah later on in Perek Vav that says you can only buy vegetables the year following Shvius, only once the vegetables have been produced during that year. And Rabbi Yehuda doesn't seem to argue over there. So then what possibly difference could there be between Luf, where Rabbi Yehuda's matra at Miyad, and other vegetables, which he agrees you have to wait the requisite time for it to be sold? That's the Gemara's Kasha. So all that has to be added parenthetically, just the magic words of my time with Rabbi Yehuda.
What? As a rove, you're going to wait until the next crop grows, so you can use both, because most likely it's the new crop.
Right. That's correct. I mean, if you knew for sure that it was the old crop, you can't use it. Right? Gozer al-Halof, the Chachamim were geyser when it came to uprooting loaf, you have to do it with a shinoi. As we've said, Misham, Misil, whatever the shinoi was. So therefore, since you had already had a din of shinoi applicable to the loaf, so you're going to therefore not be gozer. What he's saying here is that the people who are chosh and alashvius will not go out of their way, since when they're going to be digging it up, they're going to have to be digging it up in public. So they're going to have to follow the rules, and they know they have to use these different kalim. That's such a big terka for them to go out of the way to do that and then try to sell it. They wouldn't do that. So therefore, if they're selling loof, it must be that it was picked this year. Masha Enkein, the other vegetables didn't have the gzera, so that therefore it was a bigger chash, so you have to wait longer. Okay, so the gzera made it a little more kuladik, so you could buy it earlier. That's Rabbi Huda's svar. Okay, does that make sense? Me'ata afilu b'shvi'is hei mutter. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, then even during the Shemitah year itself, let it be mutter. Right? After all, they have to dig it up with a shinoi. They're not going to dig it up. They're not going to grow it, and then it'll be too big a tircha for them to bother doing this be'isser. So let them sell that also. So that's the question. So the Gemara says, b'tomen anan kayamen. We're talking about loaf, which was buried. Okay, here we go again with this buried thing, which I don't know why we can't get away from this case. Yeah, we were saying this from the Rash already a couple days. Now we have the Gemara itself saying it. So here it says like this. Consequently, when we say that an unscrupulous person would not go through the trouble of harvesting loaf in an unusual manner, we mean he will not do so just in order to realize a profit at a future time. However, he would go through the trouble in order to realize an immediate profit. So this is, I don't know how people think. This is the way the Gemara says that they think. I have to accept it. Thus, when it comes to purchasing loaf in the seventh year, when after harvesting the loaf in an unaltered manner, he'd be able to sell it right away, you have to be choshesh. So therefore, you can't buy it during the seventh year. Mashenkein, in the eighth year, you don't have to be choshesh that he dug it up in an unusual way in the seventh year, and now he's selling it. All right, and so he won't go and bring from the osir and say, I brought from that which was buried in the sixth year. So 12, he has a question over here. The Gemara said that Rabbi Huda said it was mutter by loaf in the beginning of the eighth year. So he writes like this. However, in regard to buying loaf in the seventh year, he'll be able to sell it right away. Rabbi Huda prohibits the purchase. But upon consideration, here's the question. Why is the eighth year any different from the seventh year? Perhaps the person will pick the loaf at the very end of the seventh year and sell it at the very beginning of the eighth year. That way you have the sale right next to the harvest. We're saying that the harvest in the seventh year, he'll do that if he's going to make the profit immediately. Well, at the end of the seventh year, you could also have a case where he's harvesting and then immediately selling it at the beginning of the eighth year. That's what he's questions. So he says he won't trouble himself to pick the loaf at the end of the seventh year in an altered manner if he can just wait a couple of days and then dig it up regularly. That's what you thought. Okay. Very good. Next. Trying to figure out how a person who doesn't keep the din thinks and what he will do and what he won't do. I leave that for the Yerushalmi to figure that out. I've never been able to figure that out. The rabbis disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. They say what? That even in the beginning of the year, we're concerned he picked it in the seventh year. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda brings a raya from his brisa, Tani. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, Maisa Shayinu, Be'in Kushan. Here's a story. Everybody likes a story. So we were sitting around in En Kushan, it's the name of a place. I would say En with an Aleph would be more appropriate. No, En Kushan. It's completely. Yes. Moitzai HaChag. And it's Moitzai Sukkos. Presumably, Moitzei Sukkos of the eighth year, right? And what happened? They ate loaf. Right? It says Shemot Zoshvis. They were eating loaf in front of Reb Tarfon. And Lomelodomer, right? He didn't say anything to them, right? You see, Reb Tarfon, who lived earlier than they did, allowed loaf to be purchased immediately after the Shvias. So you see, I'm right. You can buy it right after the Shvias. Rabbi Yosef says, you got the story. You don't remember what happened. I was with you. It wasn't Moitzei Sukkos. It was Moitzei Pesach. So it was much longer into the year, in which case, everybody agrees it's winter once you've waited that long, right?
Because the new crop
has grown. Sure. So this is typical, right? You're trying to say Eidos, and I make you with an Eid Zayman by telling you you were with me, and you can't say that. Yeah. I'll talk to you more. Now we're going to talk about a whole different Inyan, very Geshmak Inyan, the Inyan of Lifnei Ivro L'Sita Mechshol, our favorite, one of our favorite topics in Shas, right? So these are the Kalim that an Uman cannot sell on Shvias. Meaning that there's an Israel Lifnei Ivro L'Sita Mechshol, right? I hope I didn't say something that was insulting. And he brings over here in 17, he brings a big hakdama, and like it's the Rambam and the Rash that he feels is very important to know. So it's okay if we just summarize this real quick. So the Rambam says that, the Pasuk says, as sviach kitzircha lo salakeit, the aftergrowth of your harvest, which means that that which grows by itself during the Shemitah year, you shall not reap. Now, it can't mean to completely forbid reaping, because, after all, we know we can pick the food during the Shemitah year for our own eating. So what does it mean you can't reap it, right? So it must mean it can't be reaped in the usual manner. What does that mean, not in the usual manner? So that's where we have the Machlokes, the Rambam, and the Rash. The Rambam says, when we say not the usual manner, it means the volume that you're going to be cutting. So if you cut a large amount, normally you'll cut a lot of tefuah to store up. So you'll be doing a lot of reaping. That's what the pasuk is telling you. You can't reap in the usual manner. You can only reap a little bit at a time. You know, a couple of meals, whatever. And the Rash says, no, it's the way in which you do it. It's the type of implement you use. You can't do it in the usual manner, meaning you can't use your usual
tool.
The tool has to change. So again, the Rambam holds its volume has to change. The Rash holds the tool has to change. That's a basic machlokas here. There's another machlokas which has to do with when does this kick in? According to the Rash, this only kicks in if you, meaning when I say it only kicks in, the only time you have to change the tool is if you were over on the Issa D'Oraisa and kept people out of your field. So if you kept people out of your field, so then there's a din that if you're going to come to subsequently reap from that backyard and wanted to cut that produce, you have to use a different implement. A different, is that a word? Implement?
Cutting tool.
According to the Rambam, that's irrelevant. Whether you kept the Torah, didn't keep the Torah, that's not the point. So that's what he says. So taking the last paragraph, we'll just do the last paragraph inside. Taking the two disputes together, we may sum up by saying that according to the Rambam, all fields must be harvested little by little, but any type of tool may be used. According to Rash, fields that were left open to the public can be harvested in any manner, meaning using any kind of tool, while fields which access has been blocked, even for a short time, must be harvested with non-conventional tools. And then, if you use a non-conventional tool, he's got this kula, you can harvest it all at once. He doesn't have this requirement of the Rambam, okay? So now, these are the kelim that an Oman is not allowed to sell on Shvias. These are the farming implements a craftsman is not permitted to sell. Maharisha v'chol keleho. This is a plow, all its accessories. Ha'ol the yoke. Hamizra the winnowing fork. V'hadekar and a hoe. Okay, so the reason is these items, for some reason the Mishnah considers these items' sole function is from lachos v'asuros, on Shemitah, and therefore, if I'm going to sell it, what am I going to be over? If I'm going to sell it to somebody who is choshen al Shemitah, l'theiver. Of course, if you're upgehita yid and you keep, you know, all the Torah, and you happen to come to buy implement during the Shemitah year, it's 100% mutter to sell to you because that wouldn't be considered l'theiver, right? Okay, it's only for someone who's choshen al Shemitah.
There's another shop next door who's selling it, and you can go there if you don't sell it. Is that still within you?
That's the sugya of Avodah Zarah and other places and in Shabbos, and then they're going to try to say that. Then it drops down to an Issur Rabbanan of Ein Messiah Day Over Avera. It would not be an Issur of Lifnei Ivur D'Oraisa. Okay. There's a question here. I just want to speak this one question out. The question is that what is the problem with the winnowing fork? We understand the other three utensils that they're used for mamash, the parisha and so on, lachas, which are usher. But what's a winnowing fork used for? If I go and I collect a handful of straw, a handful of wheat from your field, I'm going to need a winnowing fork to winnow out whatever I collected. So that's not an Isser on Shemitah. Why should that be Isser? Why are they Issering this utensil? That's the kasha they asked. So it says over here, it's in the middle of 22, Mari Kirkus and Tosis Yontov answer, a winnowing fork is intended only for large-scale winnowing. So that has to be the answer, right? There's small winnowing and major winnowing. So this apparently, this is only used for large-scale. Okay, next. We're now on 39B. Are we doing on time? Mm-hmm. We're a little bit behind schedule. Avo Meicher hu magal yad u magal kotzir va'agol u'chokeleho. You could sell hand sickle, reaping sickle, wagon, all accessories. These have permitted uses on Shvi'is. So there's a rule that whenever something is a suffix, in other words, you could possibly use these kalim for something which is osur, but it's also possible to use them for something that's mutter. And whenever there's a suffix, it's never considered lifnei ivur. It's a very interesting yisod. Think about that for a second. In other words, normally, if you have a sacred deraisa, you got to go l'chumra. But over here, the fact that it's a suffix makes it ois deraisa. There's no deraisa at all here at all. It's not like it's a suffix whether I'm being over lifnei ivur. But I'm not being over lifnei ivur. It's not a suffix. I'm not being over lifnei ivur because there's a permitted use of it. That's an important rule. Okay. He talks about Sfichim again in footnote 1, Ayin Shom, if you're interested in that problem. Like, why is this mutter? There are cases where Sfichim are mutter, so therefore these utensils are mutter. Zalkal, Chol Shemachtum Yucheretz Lavadasa is Osir. Whenever it's Miyuchad, it's Osir. Chol Leso Lehetter Mutter. Whenever it's a Suffolk, it's mutter. Next. Hayoitzer, now we're talking about a potter. Now, the Chazal came up with a certain amount. If I go out and I collect in the field olives, or I collect grapes, I'm going to produce wine, I'm going to produce oil. There's a certain volume that's considered reasonable if I were to go out and collect it. For myself, there's a certain a reasonable amount, which they set that amount at 5 jugs of oil and 15 barrels of wine. I don't know where this came from. Maybe I didn't learn the Gemara enough. But this is what the Mishnah says. Hayoitzer, the one who's a potter, he can sell to a single individual, maker kade chamesh chamed shemen, 5 oil jugs, but chamesh esrei kareyayin, he can sell 15 wine jugs.
It's just selling the jugs.
Right? And it's all empty jugs. Shekein darko lohavi min ha-hefker. This is the amount that someone can reasonably be expected to bring home from hefker. Mehevi yoyser mikan, but if the customer brought more than this amount, meaning I come to your store, you're the, the potter. I come to your house, the potter's house. And I say, look, Mr. Potter, Harry, I have all this produce that I collected, and it's going to take 20 jugs for wine, and I need you to sell me 20 jugs, okay? I have a lot. So it says mutter. What does mutter mean? So some say that the pshat is mutter means I'm allowed to sell you the 15 that Chazal gave me a heter to sell. You're not allowed to sell 20. Mutter does not mean you can sell more to accommodate the extra. Mutter means you can sell the 15 jugs. Okay? It's a little tricky. One second, that was a pshat. What I just told you was in footnote 4. I was telling you the Chazon Ish. This is the Chazon Ish, that if the person brought home more than this amount, he could sell him the 5 oil jugs and the 15 wine jugs. Okay. So that's the Chazon Ish's pshat. I'm sorry, Gotti. The other pshat is that it is mutter to sell him the amount. Okay. That was the so that's the pshat of the Tosis Yom Tov in the name of Rabbi Leo of London.
Does he have to show it to him? If he just tells it to him, that's good enough.
Who's him? Who, I don't know who him is.
He tells the potter.
Yeah.
I need 15. He can sell him the 15.
Yes.
Now, if he says I need 25.
So you're saying the Mishnah seems to be just being arbitrary. What's the point of the rule then, right? Yeah. Maybe he has to prove it.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Let's put it this way. I would have said like this. I would have said, is it after the fact or before the fact? So
to be after the fact. Because it's the chashashes that the perish streets are going to be damaged. He has the olives, or he has the grapes, or whatever.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what was Chazal's kavana over here. Were they trying to limit how many barrels I can buy so that when I go out collecting the produce, I don't collect more than is reasonable?
Right. Why are they managing my money?
They're managing an isser. It's an isser for you to collect more than you need.
On
Shvius. Yeah, you can't collect the itzer. You
but
can't
if
collect.
I can get a good deal on the wheelbarrows during Shvius, why can't I buy them? Because I make look like I'm using them.
Because I think that we're gonna say you're gonna go. You'll be motivated. I think that's, I'm not 100% sure. I'm guessing.
That's what the Lutnay
is. Yeah, I'm not sure.
So when he says that, is the Mishnah saying that's as much oil and wine that a person, a single person, a family?
In number 3, he says that if you're going to bring home more than this amount, what he says here is we have reason to suspect that he obtained it from a field that had been illegally closed to the public. In other words, Shamsi closed his backyard to the public. He called me, he said, Shlomi, come on over to my backyard, collect all you like. But no one else is allowed in. So that's the only, because normally we're all competing for the same stuff in the same fields because it's open to everybody. So in such a competitive environment, it's only reasonable to assume that there would be 15-5 type of a situation. So that's the chash. So I don't know if it's before or after, or whether that's that important. But but your point is a good point. So I think that in other words, if he's going to just come to me and say I want 25 because I need 25, and the Mishnah is saying it's mutter, there's no teeth to this halacha. So I would venture a guess that he would have to show him the need to show to prove the need. I'm not sure. I don't see it inside.
And is this is this for an individual? Is it for a family? Or it's kind of strange. It doesn't indicate what that amount.
You're saying that this is what I said when they gave out those garbage pails for recycling, and I said, what are you kidding me? You have the same recycle thing for a family of 2, and I have a family of 9, and I'm supposed to fit everything in one garbage pail? It's like, it didn't make any sense. Everybody can't be given the same size garbage pail. That's the same question, yeah. Right?
Right.
It turned out it worked out. I was able to get everything in there.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
His family used it for 5 weeks or 6 weeks.
Yeah.
We filled it up.
Yeah. That's true. I was looking at Rosh Tirlo over here. I don't know. It's okay. We'll have to look into that question. It's a good question. Okay. I like the Chazanish's pshat. Maybe Yosef Mikan Mutter, that if he brings home more, then you can sell him just the amount that we Chazal allowed him to. The potter can sell a guy in Eretz Yisrael whatever amount he needs because he's not mitzvah, right? And you don't have to be worried that he's going to then turn around and sell it to a yid, I guess. Well, Yisrael b'chutz la'aretz, obviously there's no din of Shemitah, and you don't have to be worried that he's going to bring a payers from Eretz Yisrael to chutz la'aretz. Okay, next. He shouldn't sell a plowing cow. A plowing cow. Oh, how that cow does plow. Beisil says it's mutter. Why? He can slaughter it. This was the classic case, if you remember the Gemara. Where was the Gemara? Was it Bamatzia? Or was it Mavakala? I don't remember. I think it was Bamatzia, maybe. That's where Rav and Shmuel have their famous machlokas, whether you go basarov or not. You bought a cow, and it turned out that it was a wild cow, and the mocher can say, "Oh, I thought you wanted to buy it to shecht it," and it turns out I wanted it for laradya for plowing. Yeah, so Beisol says like that, right? Mokolai peres afilu b'shas hazera, you can sell him fruit. What's he selling him? Even during the planting season. In other words, you don't have to assume that he plans on planting the produce since he might want it for eating. Even Bishama, he forbids selling a plowing cow. I agree in this case. There's no empirical presumption as to the person's illegal intentions. So that's the idea, right? I can send him this saw, which is a measure, even though he has a threshing floor. Because the measure, again, this is the halacha I told you before. You might want to be measuring your shvius produce for storage, which is forbidden. Shvius produce must be eaten, not stockpiled for the future. Okay, that's a rule. Remember this rule: cannot stockpile shvius for the future. We may assume rather that he needs to measure the produce for his own grinding, which is mutter, right? So it's an immediate use. The second thing is, here I have workers that are working for me. I'm going to need to pay them. But I only have $100 bills, so I'm going to go to you and say, do you have change? You're going to break me $100, and I'm going to give you the change so that you can go pay your workers in small bills. So I'm helping you. If that's what I'm doing, if you're hiring workers to work in your field, Shemitah, I'm helping you be Iver and Isser. So, nonetheless, you can go ahead and give him change because there are other uses, obviously, for change besides paying workers.
Why don't we say Tanit Kolodon Kapskos in these cases?
Because these people are chashed. They're chashed already. Yeah, they're chashed already. So there's a reis in their kashros. B'chulin b'feir shasrona. And everybody, if they say, in other words, we're assuming that they can be used for both uses. But if I tell you what I'm going to use it for, and I tell you I'm going to use it for something which is usher, then of course I can't give it to you. Okay? Our Mishnah is talking about someone who is chashed on shvius. That's the person who you can't sell it to, but a person who's not chashed, you can sell it anytime. Staman mahu. What's the law if the person's level of shvius observance is unknown? It's what we call the stam. A stam balabas, right? So can you sell him the implements or not? The Gemara says, since it says in the Mishnah that if a utensil, it could be used either for Isser or for Heter, that it is mutter to sell him such a utensil. Since that's mutter, so therefore the Gemara is medayik, that a hado onra stam on mutter. So therefore, if it's unknown, it's permissible. Because that the Gemara is basically saying, if you're mesupik, what he's going to use it for, it's mutter. So here you have a person, you're mesupik, what kind of person he is, that's also mutter. Okay, it's a very interesting raya. Last thing, hayotzer mocher, the potter can sell these 5 and 15 jugs. Hosh lemar shama hechalif. Let's be afraid. Maybe he's going to switch it. I tell you I need 15 jugs of wine, and you give me the 15 jugs, and then I go ahead and I use those jugs for the oil. You know, how do you know I'm going to use it for wine, right? That's the question.
There were different kinds of jugs.
Apparently. Yeah. Now, what was the kasha? Rashash asked the question, what's the question of the Gemara? We just said that if you have a suffix, whether it could be used for mutter or it could be used for heter, we're matarit. So over here, so yeah, it's possible he'll use it for oil, but it's also possible he'll use it for wine. So this is a classic case of heter, right? See, Tosis on Shishem regarding this question. He doesn't give the answer here. That's a good question, right? I think it's a good question. I'm not sure. Oh, so he says, okay. Amrav Yoina, ni koros hein elu shol yayin ve elu shol shemen. These are different types of jugs. You can tell a wine jug from an oil jug. Okay? They're shaped differently. Whatever. You can't switch up these jugs, apparently, that easily. Amrav Ula, idra di ilayin chakimah, idra di ilayin chakimah. The leather of these are recognizable. The leather of these is recognizable. He says leather here is a borrowed term, because jugs are made out of clay, not leather. He means the clay from which each types of the jugs are made have a distinct appearance. So if they would put oil or wine in the jug of the opposite, the contents would spoil. Obviously.
That's
where it came from.
Yeah.
So just like leather bags hold oil and hold
wine,
so too these jugs, which are made out of clay, hold oil, hold wine. They obviously absorb into the actual barrel quite a bit of a volume, as is known. Okay, have a good day.
Okay, so Matzah Shabbos is
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
This is Wednesday, so...